Welcome to BBRO's October Bcast. I'm Francesca Broom, your host and Knowledge Exchange Manager for BBRO. Now, we tend to think of September as a time of new beginnings, and it's certainly been that for BBRO, with a change of command as Dr. Figgy Foster moves on to Pastures New and Professor Mark Stevens takes the helm. And as we enter October, we look at some new and exciting changes within the industry too, with changes to the seed accounts, providing flexibility and wider choices for growers, alongside the changes mentioned in last month's podcast regarding the recommended list. So it's time to put the kettle on, sit back and relax, unless you're driving, and hear of the positive outcomes that these changes could bring to you and your farm.
So we have Nick Morris, Head of Agriculture and the Supply Chain for British Sugar, and Arthur Marshall from Commercial and Market Insight Manager for NFU Sugar. So thank you both for joining us for what is going to be quite an interesting chat about the Seed Working Group and some of the changes. So let's start with you, Nick. What is the Seed Working Group?
Yes, thank you, Chairs, and thank you for the invite to the BBRO Bcast. So the Seed Working Group is a group that's made up of NFU Sugar and British Sugar members, and we jointly operate the UK seed account. So this is where we purchase the seed requirements for the crop, and then we make that available to the growers. So we operate the account on an open book with NFU Sugar. It's not for profit, and ultimately our objectives is to buy the best seed we can for the UK crop to drive that continued innovation and yield progression, as well as promote investment in the UK market when it comes to seed breeding, seed technology, so we can continue to evolve and respond to emerging threats and really seize those opportunities in crop performance.
And Nick, you obviously work with quite a few of the seed breeders with that, don't you? How many are involved?
Ordinarily, we are working with five seed breeders, which are supplying the UK market. And so we meet with them regularly throughout the year to organise sort of fairly logistical things such as getting seed to the market, processing, meeting the timelines required by the market, to more strategic conversations as well around how we evaluate seed technologies, to responding to emerging threats which might pose a risk to the industry or that's being seen across Europe. So we do collaborate very, very closely with the seed breeders.
So this follows on quite nicely from last month's Bcast, where we interviewed Mike May and talked about the RL board. And obviously, the seed that you're dealing with currently all comes from the recommendation of the RL, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And even ahead of that, varieties brought to the market go through the variety listing process run by AFA, and that's before they receive entry onto the recommended list process. So by the time the seed is actually supplied to the market, we can be really confident and assured that it's been through a stringent evaluation process led by BBRO.
Of course, with the testing that we do, it means that we know that they are working well within our maritime climate. It gives a bit of confidence to the growers. But how long have we actually been running the Seed Working Group as it stands?
Well, that goes back a long way, but certainly predates my time in the industry. I would think it would be 30 or 40 years at least.
So very successful, long time, but it is now time for change, isn't it? And that's what we want to discuss now. So Arthur, perhaps you can just explain to us a little bit about why the need for change.
Yeah, thank you, Chaz. I think really sort of picking up just where you left off with Nick there, over the time that the seed account has existed and NFU and British Sugar have worked closely together, there's been incremental change with the introduction of pelleting, or the first introduction of priming and seed advancement. And obviously those things feel quite a long time ago now, but each time I think the model and the whole structure has adapted and evolved in order to cope with that. So I see it very much as we need to continue changing and reforming the system to be relevant and up to date for the challenges we face now. But specifically, if we look at the changes that we've announced this time, which specifically are that growers will be empowered now and permitted to buy and sell seed via any route they choose. So whether that's through the seed account or whether it's directly from a breeder, whether it's through a third party, there'll no longer be that contractual requirement on growers to obtain seed in a certain way. And then secondly, there'll be the ability for growers to purchase seed that comes not just from the recommended list, but also seed that's candidates for the recommended list that is variety listed, but is not yet fully recommended, but in that process. So for those growers who might be a little bit more willing to take a risk on newer varieties and wanting to have the opportunities of the newest genetics, that brings on some opportunities for them.
Do you want to just explain to listeners what you mean by a candidate?
Yes, so a candidate variety in this situation, we're talking about varieties that are listed on the variety list, and that means they've been through the AFA testing process and can be legally sold in the UK, but haven't been through the third year of recommended list testing in order to make it onto the RL. So there'll be a family of varieties there in any given year that have had 2 years of testing and therefore have made it onto the variety list, but are still in the process of their third year of testing to decide whether they make it onto the recommended list. Obviously, some of them will make the grade, some of them won't, and that's the right thing for the recommended list process to do. What we wanted to do is give growers the opportunity who are willing to take a punt on those varieties, which won't suit all growers. That's an opportunity to access the newest genetics sooner, a year sooner than historically, but with the caveat and with the understanding that those varieties might not ultimately make the recommended list the following year. They may fail to make the grade, or indeed they may be listed and become a much bigger, more exciting variety in the future.
So have you any idea how many varieties we're going to end up offering to growers?
The changes we've made aren't about trying to target a certain number. So the varieties on the recommended list will be whatever the recommended list committee decides to list in a given year. And then because of the changes we've made in terms of what can be sold, again, there's no limit to the number of varieties that could be in that year three candidate stage. For this particular year, we understand there'd be four varieties that are candidates for the recommended list in that third year of testing that will be available commercially. But in other years, that number could be different. It could be much bigger sometimes, it could be much smaller. But what we're trying to achieve with this is to give growers a greater degree of choice, spread out some of that demand. So if we look in the last couple, 2 or 3 years, one of the really big challenges we've had as a sector is a large number of growers all wanted the same two or three varieties as their first choice. And with a finite supply available, which is based on a breeder's own commercial decisions, that made it really challenging that the demand simply outstripped the supply for some of those really popular varieties. So we challenged ourselves to say, how can we try to manage this better so that more growers can get what they want, and therefore the sector ultimately, for the sake of the industry, that it ultimately gets the beet grown that growers want to grow. And one of the ways of doing that is by trying to spread that demand out. If we can allow growers to purchase more of the candidate varieties, that might start to spread out some of the demand that otherwise would have all piled into the same varieties on the recommended list, and then hopefully mean there's less of a rush for every grower or a large number of growers trying to secure the same one or two or three varieties.
So I know last year, this is a bit like opening up the market, isn't it, to make sure that there is the choice there. But there was quite a few of the seed breeders had some issues with seed last year due to the weather impact. Do you see this helping them to bring new candidates forward, or perhaps seed where they can't produce as much as they have in the past?
Absolutely. I think you're right. There's two points here you make that I think are very good points. One is risk management for the sake of the industry. We saw last year the challenges we can face when there are adverse weather conditions in the seed producing regions, and it does put pressure on the seed supply available. And clearly for the industry as a whole, for growers and for British Sugar, we don't want to be in a situation where there's not enough seed to supply growers. So having a greater range of varieties available is the right thing, and it's more resilient. And secondly, I think you're also correct to say that by opening up the opportunity to sell these varieties into the commercial market, hopefully it makes it a more exciting market for breeders to want to launch new genetics into. And if that allows them greater opportunities to test in a commercial situation, to test on farm, to see the performance, then I think that's also a good thing. Hopefully it will help them generate more data, more understanding, and a better product portfolio in the long run.
So Nick, if we're bringing in new genetics, new traits, is anyone going to be observing them and just sort of keeping an eye on what's happening across the industry?
Yeah, I think absolutely. And increasingly, that's something we're going to be collectively as an industry leaning into more, whether it's through formal replicated trials, such as the recommended list, which the BBRO undertake, to other observational trials, you know, how varieties perform in the presence of different pests and diseases. Again, that's an extension of the recommended list. We have untreated trials, so it's really useful to be able to see how varieties perform from a disease perspective when not treated with fungicide, to probably less, you know, less formal trials as well. We have the National Crop Survey, where we monitor over 300 fields throughout the year, and we make observations for disease and virus presence. And I think increasingly it should be an aim where collectively as an industry we can leverage big data from making observations on any number of factors on a big data basis. We grow 10 or 11,000 fields of sugar beet in the UK, depending on what the total crop area is from one year to the next. And I've got no doubt we could leverage more collective value from that.
And all of the varieties that are going to be available have to be on the VL anyway. So they have already had sort of quite vigorous testing in their country of origin, haven't they?
Yeah, the VL trialling process happens in the UK. So they're trials that are undertaken by AFA. And effectively, in the first 2 years, as a minimum, that a variety has entered into the UK, it has to pass those that trialling process.
I think it's a very important point. Yeah, for us, I think collectively for us and for British Sugar, the value and the importance of testing and data transparency is absolutely critical. And I think the recommended list is absolutely the gold standard of data transparency and growers being able to see how varieties perform on a number of areas and make a really informed decision. And so in tandem with opening up the opportunity for growers who wish to buy varieties that aren't yet on the recommended list, clearly we needed to make sure that there would be that data transparency and retain just the importance of the testing and growers knowing what they're buying. Alongside that, we've invested a lot of time and conversations in trying to make sure that variety list data can be shown to growers to help growers understand what they're purchasing, because having that transparency of data is a really important point for us still. And that's why part of the rules that we've agreed with British Sugar, in order for a variety to be permitted for sale, although it doesn't have to be on the recommended list if it's in that candidate process, it does have to be in that process of testing for it. So a variety still has to either be listed or be in the process of testing to see if it will be listed.
So, and I think growers need to be aware that the varieties that come forward, if they're not on the RL, then BBRO particularly will not have data necessarily for them. So it may be a case if you're buying from the VL rather than the RL that you need to go to the breeder for data as opposed to coming to BBRO or yourselves or British Sugar.
Absolutely. But what we're striving to do is provide what data and information we can on it in order to give some transparency for that exact reason. And then alongside it, the changes in the way that seed can be marketed are also designed to help make sure suppliers are fully accountable for the performance of their seed, particularly if there is a certain claim made against it that that the loop is closed, so to speak. And hopefully in this new model, it adds a bit more flexibility for suppliers to be accountable and for growers ultimately to change their decisions if they don't feel they're happy with the service level they've obtained from a certain supplier.
And obviously from different breeders as well, because we started the conversation, Nick, with talking about how many breeders you're working with on the current seed working group. But will this open this up for more breeders that perhaps we've not seen in the UK before?
I mean, potentially, I think that opportunity has always been there for breeders. I mean, generally, I think in all sectors, we've seen a consolidation of breeders in the market. So kind of a bit like Arthur's point earlier on, you know, is the number of breeders in the market a distinct objective? Not necessarily. I think it's a good thing, and we want to promote competition, and particularly in breeding and technologies and performance. But whether it's the number of varieties, the number of breeders, which our aim is to continue to promote that investment in the UK market from the breeding world. So yeah, we really encourage that. I think the other thing which we haven't quite touched upon, but again, it sort of talks to the data transparency point that Arthur made. We're really encouraged to learn of the changes intended on the BBRO recommended list process from 2025. So some of the feedback we used to get from growers might have referenced how the trialing process didn't necessarily precisely reflect how they grew the sugar beet crop on their own farm. So with the changes intended for the trialing process for 2025, where they can end up with a direct comparison between different seed technologies on the same variety and have the reassurance that it's been grown with the same technologies that they'll buy off the shelf, I think will give a great deal of confidence, and that data transparency that Arthur referenced, you know, in the products that they're the finished products that they're buying.
Yeah, and I do know that the BBRO team have already started to look at this. And I would say Stephen is excited about having a lot more trials, but I'm not quite sure whether excited is the right word.
He's on a journey, I hear.
A journey's a very good way of putting that, I think. So obviously there's going to be seed coming in from all of the different seed breeders. Will there be limits as to how much they can buy from any one breeder?
No, we don't impose any sort of restrictions on the number of units that can be represented from any one breed or any one variety. It won't, you know, fundamentally change the fact that we'll always be limited supply of some varieties, and demand is often likely to continue to exceed the supply available. I think the key thing is we will be maximising the opportunity to sell growers the seed that they choose. Probably an obvious point, but worth remembering that, you know, sugar beet seed is harvested in the summer in France and Italy, and you know, the seed crop yield can vary like any other crop yield can vary. So while we get initial indications of availability from breeders perhaps sort of mid-summer, they themselves won't actually know what the final volumes that will be available to each of their distinct markets until the harvest is complete, so all the way through August. And then after harvest is complete, they then go through a great deal of processing and screening. So really, we're well into the autumn before they've got absolute certainty around the likely volume available. And because of that, when we often start selling seed, perhaps in the summertime or early autumn, we're selling seed against an unknown final quantity. So the idea of selling seed through the year, we'll be able to release seed as we go through the year when we're certain we can provide it, and continually make seed available as that certainty increases and respond to what will hopefully be increasing volumes available as the year progresses.
For you, Arthur, if we're looking at people buying in early, say, candidate varieties, how many years can they buy a candidate variety if it never makes it to the RL?
If they're a candidate variety, that's specifically if they've made it onto the variety list and they're in that third year of testing, which would get them onto the RL. If a variety fails to pass through that gate and effectively is never listed the following year, it would not be permissible for a grower to grow under the contract. Whereas if it did pass through the gate and made it onto the recommended list, then clearly it would remain permissible because that's on the recommended list. So the idea there of what we've agreed is not that there would be some sort of infinite cycle of a variety being a candidate, because in short order, it will either make the list or not. And this is just about opening up that opportunity to market. But clearly, I think it reiterates any grower choosing to buy that seed should do so with their eyes completely open, that they're not buying it with the same level of confidence in its performance as you would if you go for a fully listed variety.
So the changes are not to supersede the RL, are they? It's just about as we said before, opening up the market and making sure that there's more access. So, Nick, we know the market's now open. We know that growers have got more choice. But actually, how do they go about accessing their varieties for 2025?
I think the first thing I'd do is just reassure growers not to panic, not to worry. We are going to send specific instruction on how growers can order seed for the 2025 crop. So there'll be all of the information documented in one place, and growers can be confident in that. Everything that growers are familiar with will remain in place. We are effectively creating a slightly new website. It'll look the same, it'll be in the same place. Been some quite significant changes to the platform, really to de-link seed ordering from the sugar beet contract. So it's always been the case that a grower would complete their contract, and then sort of step two of that would be the ordering of their seed. The ordering process will be online through My British Sugar. We will have paper derivative for those that still don't order their seed online. And the UK seed account will be making seed available, certainly from all breeders, even if not all varieties from all breeders will be available through the UK seed account. But we'll make that clear in the pack. So growers will be able to order their seed in the normal way, through the normal process. And in terms of payment, it's always been the case that we can deduct the cost of that seed from the following year's sugar beet crop. That facility will remain available. But on top of that, growers will also be able to approach breeders to purchase seed directly. Now, what we have committed to do is continue to inform growers of how and where they can buy their seed. So we'll continue to make that information available.
And will that bring about changes for the seed treatments as well?
We'll be offering seed available in a Germaine's enriched format, so enriched 200 and enriched 300. And we'll also be offering breeders proprietary seed pelleting technologies as well. So it's our ambition to offer all products in all formats. You know, that might change and evolve over time, and not everything will always be available in all formats, but it's our ambition to sort of maintain that offer to growers, because we know that that freedom of choice is important and has been valued by growers for a long time up to now. We continue to want to evolve, improve, innovate seed availability to growers, whether it's through breeding technologies or through different marketing arrangements.
Nick, you've mentioned that seed orders are going to be open as of certainly the 1st of October, but for this year, there is no rush. And I believe, Arthur, you've been working hard to make sure that there's a little bit of a time span for growers to work within.
Yeah, so part of the changes we've made is we don't want growers to feel that they all have to come onto the screen at the same time on the same day and all the seed will be available at once. So we've been working closely with British Sugar in this setup for the new model here, that some seed will be made available now, but then there'll be other seed made available later on into the new year, which is all about this point Nick made earlier about the certainty on the volumes and being able to make more seed available when it's clear exactly how much has been produced. But hopefully what that gives growers the reassurance that decisions don't all have to be made at the same time. There'll be some growers who'll prefer to wait for more data and more information and make a later decision, other growers who would prefer to make an earlier decision.
And I think that we'll probably all be quite pleased with that, because it does mean our phones won't be hot for the first 24 hours of the seed order opening. So thank you very much. And we look forward to seeing how the new seed account works for the 2025 season.
Thank you.
As mentioned, we discussed changes to the RL in last month's Beatcast. This is still available and worth a listen. And also, for further info on varieties, we have released a video which is available via our website, YouTube channel, and also accessible via Advisory Bulletin number 17. Next month, we'll have more exciting news for you as we test a new piece of kit that could revolutionise pest and disease identification in the future. That will definitely be one worth tuning into. So, for now, good luck with the rest of harvest, and thank you for listening.